Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to really get under the skin of big topics so you walk away feeling truly informed. And today, we're jumping into maybe the oldest question, right? Is the reality we see, feel, touch, is it actually real? Or is it more like, I don't know, a dream? It's a question that's bugged people forever, you know, ancient thinkers, modern scientists, everyone. So our mission today is to look at how cutting-edge physics, really mind-bending stuff, seems to be saying similar things to ancient wisdom traditions. Basically, that reality might be way more fluid, connected, maybe even illusory, than we think. We'll be touching on quantum mechanics, the holographic principle, even the simulation idea, and comparing that with, like, Buddhist emptiness, Hindu Maya, Gnosticism, a whole range.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's important to say up front, we're not trying to say, you know, nothing is real, don't worry about paying your taxes. Mm. It's more about digging into the nature of reality. What is it, fundamentally? And what's so fascinating, I think, is how these totally different fields, science, philosophy, spirituality, seem to converge on similar ideas, that reality isn't quite as solid or absolute as it appears.
Okay, let's unpack that. Because before we can even talk about reality being an illusion, we kind of have to grapple with consciousness itself. I mean, it's the only way we experience anything, right? Mm. But pinning it down, defining it, that's notoriously hard. What are the main roadblocks there?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Philosophers call it the hard problem. How does physical stuff like neurons firing in your brain create the subjective feeling, that feeling of what it's like to be you, seeing red or feeling happy? Thomas Nagel really nailed that description. Neuroscience can tell us a lot about, say, wakefulness, the brainstem keeping you switched on and awareness, the cortex processing information. It shows how it works in the brain.
Right, the mechanics of it.
Exactly. But it doesn't quite capture that inner feeling, the subjective quality. Then you have cognitive science, which talks about awareness of your own mental states, or maybe consciousness as like a limited resource that different processes compete for.
Okay.
And philosophy, of course, zooms right in on that first-person view. Intentionality, knowing, feeling. Descartes' I think, therefore I am is the classic example, grounding everything in that subjective awareness.
So it's this massive conceptual challenge, partly because there's no single definition everyone agrees on.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes you realize consciousness isn't just on or off. It's this whole spectrum, right? From being awake to dreaming, meditating, even those higher states people talk about. And that spectrum that naturally connects to what ancient traditions have been exploring for ages.
Precisely. And it brings up a key point. If reality is some kind of illusion, then it's this subjective first-person awareness that defines our existence within it. Consciousness and perceived reality are just completely tied together. You can't really separate them.
Okay, so consciousness is slippery. What about the reality it's perceiving? Because this is where modern physics just turns everything upside down. The stuff coming out now, it really challenges our basic assumptions about a solid, objective world out there.
Oh, absolutely. At the quantum level, forget solid. Elementary particles like electrons, quarks, they're called point particles for a reason. Zero dimensions. They act more like little blips of energy or events rather than actual things. That's wave-particle duality in a nutshell. They can be a wave or a particle, depending on how you look.
So if these basic building blocks are so fuzzy, how does physics explain what happens when we, you know, do look? Like the Copenhagen interpretation you hear about.
Right. The Copenhagen view, which is still the most common one, basically says reality only gets definite. It actualizes when it's measured or observed on our scale, the macroscopic level. Until then, particles are just in this fuzzy state of probability as described by a wave function. Interaction forces a choice, collapses the wave.
And just to be clear, when physicists talk about the observer effect, they mostly mean a physical interaction like a measuring device hitting the particle, right? Not necessarily someone's mind staring at it.
That's the strict physics definition, yes. Feynman's quote is great. Nature does not know what you are looking at. It's a physical disturbance. But that popular idea, the image of the conscious observer changing reality, it has become this really potent bridge to those older spiritual ideas about mind influencing matter. It resonates, even if it's a slight misreading of the physics.
Mm. Interesting distinction.
But even setting aside the consciousness question, there's still the measurement problem itself. How does it go from multiple possibilities superposition to just one outcome? Physicists don't fully agree. There's a whole mess of different interpretations trying to explain it. It tells us our picture of reality is definitely incomplete.
Okay.
And then you throw in quantum entanglement. Einstein called it spooky action at a distance.
Yeah.
You link two particles, separate them by miles, even light years, and measuring one instantly affects the other. Instantly.
Wow. Still sounds like science fiction.
It does. But it's real. It's been tested again and again.
Yeah.
It shows the universe is connected in this incredibly deep, non-local way. So the big takeaway from quantum mechanics is the fundamental stuff isn't solid. It's probabilistic. It's interconnected. And its properties aren't fixed until interaction. Reality feels less like a finished statue and more like clay being constantly molded.
Okay, if quantum mechanics wasn't enough to bake your noodle, let's go even further out. The holographic principle. This one suggests our entire 3D reality, everything we see, space, gravity, might just be a projection. Like a hologram beamed from a flatter, lower dimensional surface.
Exactly. It sounds wild, but it actually came out of studying black holes. Scientists like Jacob Bekenstein and Stephen Hawking realized that the information content or entropy of a black hole seemed proportional to its surface area. The 2D event horizon, not its 3D volume.
Which is weird, right? You'd expect it to be volume.
Totally counterintuitive. But it led to this idea, maybe all the information describing a volume of space can actually be encoded on its boundary. So our 3D world could be a kind of holographic representation of information and processes happening on a distant 2D surface made of, well, essentially quantum bits or qubits. It gives a potential physical mechanism for reality being an illusion, making it more than just philosophy. It challenges what space even means.
Right. And if that wasn't enough, there's the simulation hypothesis. This one's been getting a lot of traction lately, philosophically and even scientifically. Nick Bostrom's argument, the trilemma, is pretty compelling. He says one of three things is likely true.
Go on.
Either civilizations like ours almost always wipe themselves out before they can create super realistic ancestor simulations, or they reach that tech level but just choose not to run them, maybe for ethical reasons.
Right.
Or if they do run them, then simulated realities would vastly outnumber the one base reality, which means statistically we are probably in one.
Yeah, it's a logical argument that's hard to dismiss easily, and it resonates with older philosophical ideas, particularly idealism. Idealism says reality is fundamentally mental or consciousness-based. The simulation hypothesis offers a modern technological spin. Reality as an information construct, a program running, it directly challenges the idea that matter is the ultimate foundation.
So, putting that out there to you, the listener, if our existence is artificial, some kind of cosmic computer game, what does that mean for purpose, for meaning? Are your choices real?
Yeah.
Or just part of the code? Heavy stuff. And it's amazing, really, how these incredibly modern, almost sci-fi ideas from physics and philosophy suddenly sound a lot like concepts from ancient wisdom traditions.
It is quite striking. Let's start in the East, maybe with Buddhism. There's the concept of sunyata, usually translated as emptiness. It doesn't mean nothingness exactly. It refers to the idea that all things, including ourselves, broken down into the five aggregates like body, feelings, thoughts, lack inherent independent existence, they're empty of a fixed self.
So not solid, unchanging things.
Precisely. Buddhist texts use analogies like form being a lump of foam, fleeting, insubstantial. Cognition is like a magical illusion.
And I know the Mahayana school takes it even further, saying phenomena are basically conceptual constructs, right? Like dreams or illusions. They have the two truths, idea, conventional truth, how things seem, and ultimate truth, the emptiness. It's how they reconcile our daily experience with this deeper, illusory nature.
That's a great summary. And then in Hinduism, you have the concept of Maya. Again, it's often translated as illusion, but it's more nuanced. It's seen as the creative, even magical power of Brahman, the ultimate reality that manifests the universe. The world isn't unreal in the sense of fake, but it's a dependent projection, like waves arising from the single ocean of divine consciousness. The illusion comes when we mistake the wave for the ocean, the projection for the source.
Mm.
But notice the common thread. In both traditions, there's this idea that consciousness or fundamental awareness is the ground floor, and the reality we perceive arises from it as a kind of projection or appearance.
Fascinating. Now let's jump over to the West. There are echoes there too, though maybe framed a bit differently, often more dualistically. Like Gnosticism, that ancient movement. They talked about gnosis, secret, direct knowledge as the way to escape this material world. They saw this world as a kind of flawed creation made by a lesser deity, a demiurge. So Reality itself was an illusion or a realm of ignorance we needed to wake up from. That awakening from the dream idea is central.
Right. And then you have Neoplatonism, particularly Plotinus. He described reality as flowing outwards, emanating from the One, this ultimate perfect source. It flows through different levels, nous, mind, soul, down to the material world, which is the furthest away, the least real, a kind of degradation of unity.
Mm.
So the spiritual path for Plotinus was an upwards journey, moving away from the limitations of matter back towards that original source. So while the framing differs, Gnosticism seeing matter as flawed, Neoplatonism as a lower echo, the common theme is clear. Our ordinary sensory reality isn't the full picture. It's not ultimate. And that quest for gnosis or ascent, it mirrors, in a way, the scientific drive to find the deeper reality behind the appearances. Though Advaita Vedanta's non-dual view differs, seeing the projection as still of the ultimate, not separate or degraded.
So we've looked at physics, we've looked at ancient wisdom. What happens when we put it all together? Because the really stunning thing here is how often they seem to be pointing in the same direction, saying similar things, using vastly different languages.
Exactly. Both modern physics, especially quantum mechanics, and many mystical traditions challenge our everyday assumptions about existence. They both emphasize things like interdependence, nothing exists in isolation and permanence, and the fluid, interconnected nature of everything. They question the solid boundaries we usually perceive. Think about Buddhist emptiness, the lack of inherent existence. It vibes really well with quantum physics, showing a universe built on probabilities and connections, not fixed objects.
And that role of the observer, or consciousness, keeps popping up, doesn't it? Both seem to suggest that our perception of a solid, fixed reality is, in part, an illusion created or shaped by the very act of observation or interaction. Even if the physics definition of observer is just an instrument, the implications feel very resonant with Eastern ideas about consciousness co-creating reality.
They really do. And you can draw some quite specific parallels. Take Indra's net in Hinduism, this cosmic net with jewels at each intersection where every jewel reflects every other jewel. It's a metaphor for infinite interconnectedness. Now compare that to the holographic principle, where all the information for a 3D volume is encoded on its 2D boundary. The whole is reflected in the part. It's a similar structural idea.
Wow, that's a cool parallel.
Right. Or think about non-duality in Eastern thought. The idea that separation is an illusion, that ultimately everything is one unified reality. How different is that conceptually from quantum entanglement, where particles remain connected, acting as one system no matter how far apart? Deepak Chopra calls it the interconnectivity of everything. It points to that same underlying unity.
And it's not just us making these connections now. Some of the giants of physics saw it themselves, didn't they? Virchow Capra wrote The Tao of Physics, Connecting the Dots. Heisenberg mentioned Indian philosophy helping him. Niels Bohr even used the yin-yang symbol.
They did. They recognized that these seemingly weird ideas from quantum physics had echoes in much older ways of thinking about reality. And today, that hard problem of consciousness is pushing some scientists back towards these intersections. You have theories like integrated information theory, IIT. It defines consciousness based on how much information a system integrates. And it makes this radical claim that maybe only things with this integrated information, this phenomenal experience, truly exist in an absolute sense. Everything else might be less fundamental.
Whoa.
Then there's ORCH, or Orchestrated Objective Reduction, from Roger Penrose and Stuart Hameroff. It's controversial, but it suggests consciousness arises from quantum processes happening inside brain cells, in microtubules, like the brain is a quantum computer. And others look at things like the zero-point field as potentially playing a role in consciousness.
And you definitely see this reflected in popular figures today, like Deepak Chopra, Greg Braden, Azim Haramein, Bruce Lipton. They're all talking about consciousness not just emerging from matter, but maybe being fundamental to reality itself, advocating for this oneness.
Exactly. So the grand convergence, if you like, points towards a reality that's fundamentally informational, energetic, interconnected, dynamic, constantly changing. And where consciousness isn't just a side effect, but potentially a key player, maybe even the foundation.
Okay, so wrapping our heads around all that, what does it actually mean for us, for you listening right now? If reality is this kind of dream or projection, that has huge implications for how we live, for our choices, for finding purpose.
It definitely shakes things up. Take free will. If reality operates on deterministic physical laws, as some interpretations of physics suggest, or if it follows karmic laws or dependent origination, as in Eastern thought, Where does free will fit? Are our choices truly free, or are they just unfolding according to the rules of the system, the program?
That's a big one. But maybe it doesn't completely eliminate agency. If reality is shaped partly by consciousness, by observation, doesn't that suggest our thoughts, our intentions, our focus do matter? That they influence the reality we experience, even if within a larger framework?
That's a really important point. It shifts the focus. Maybe ultimate free will in a chaotic sense is an illusion, but the power to shape your experience within the flow is real. And that ties into meaning. If there's no inherent objective meaning out there in the illusion, then maybe meaning isn't something to be found, but something created. It shifts from chasing external goals to understanding your relationship to the illusion to realizing that underlying unity or awareness.
Which sounds a lot like the goal of many spiritual paths, right? Liberation, mm-hmm. enlightenment, yep. letting go of attachment to the illusion, and finding meaning in that inner connection. It becomes an internal journey, not an external hunt.
Precisely. And ethically, it gets complex too. If it's a simulation, what are the ethics of the simulators? And it forces us to look at our own moral illusions, things like confirmation bias, tribalism, the belief that the world is inherently just when evidence suggests otherwise. Our moral compass isn't always pointing true north.
So maybe ethics becomes less about rigid external rules and more about cultivating inner qualities, like intention, compassion, awareness within the dream.
That seems to be the direction it points, acting skillfully within the perceived reality.
Now, hearing reality is an illusion might sound depressing or nihilistic to some, but you're suggesting it's actually the opposite, that it's empowering, the idea that reality is crafted by our brains and that our brains don't always distinguish real from imagined.
Exactly. It's like Plato's cave. Getting out isn't about denying the shadows. It's about realizing they are shadows and turning towards the light, toward a deeper understanding. It's liberation, not denial.
And if we take the observer effect, even metaphorically, seriously, it implies our thoughts, intentions, feelings aren't just passive reactions. They're active ingredients. Waking up isn't escaping the dream. It's realizing you're the dreamer, or at least a co-dreamer. It's about changing how you perceive and interact with the dream.
Yes. Recognizing the fluidity, the malleability, allows you to consciously cultivate positive states, focus your intention, and actively participate in shaping your experienced reality. It's where modern physics, quantum ideas, and ancient wisdom about mindfulness and inner transformation meet. You gain agency within the unfolding reality.
So we've covered a lot of ground here. Journeying through quantum weirdness, cosmic holograms, simulation theories, and seeing how they echo ancient ideas of emptiness, projection, and hidden truths, it really is an astounding convergence.
It truly is. And I think the key takeaway isn't just intellectual fascination, though it is fascinating. It's the potential for a real shift in perspective. It changes how you might relate to everything, your thoughts, your experiences, the world around you.
We went from consciousness being elusive to particles being more like events, the universe maybe being a hologram or code, and finding resonance in concepts like sunyata and maya that are thousands of years old.
And the consistent thread through all of it. Reality seems fundamentally informational, energetic, interconnected, and constantly changing. Not fixed, not solid. And consciousness seems to be woven into its very fabric, not just something that pops out at the end.
So ultimately, if the reality we experience is like a dream or a projection, maybe that's incredibly liberating. It means it's not a rigid prison. It's more like a canvas. Understanding its nature, its fluidity, maybe allows us to move from just being tossed around by it to consciously participating, which leaves you, the listener, with a final thought to mull over. If your inner world, your focus, your intentions, your beliefs actively participates in shaping the reality you experience within this grand, fluid, maybe illusory dance, what will you choose to paint on your canvas today? What reality will you help bring into focus?